You're listening to Seminary Dropout, and I'm your host, Shane Blackshear. In cooperation with MissioAlliance.org, straight from my house in Austin, Texas to yours, interviews with leading Christian authors, leaders, and thinkers, because good theology should be for everyone. This is Seminary Dropout. Let's go! My guest is Kelly Nikandeha. Kelly is co-director and chief storyteller for Communities of Hope, a community development enterprise in Burundi, and co-founder of Amahoro Africa, an ongoing conversation between theologians and practitioners within the African context. Her newest book is called Adopted, The Sacrament of Belonging in a Fractured World. Kelly, thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for having me.
You were born in Los Angeles, is that right?
Correct.
And adopted shortly after that.
Right. So I was born in Los Angeles and was within a couple of months adopted into my family. And the I had an adoption agency that facilitated that. So, you know, right there at the beginning, I had a lot of different people who had a hand in pulling me into my family.
Did you grow up knowing that you were adopted the whole time?
I do not remember a time when adoption was not part of my daily vocabulary. For whatever reason, my parents, I think they had a strong intuitive sense of how important it was that this become a normal part of our conversation. And so I've always known that I was adopted and always felt really comfortable talking about it or asking questions. And that was one of the wonderful gifts I believe my parents gave me early on.
Where did you grow up? It wasn't in Los Angeles, was it?
I grew up in Orange County, so just a
little not far from there.
South, but still a California girl at heart.
What was that like for you? I mean, I've got an idea in my head about what Orange County looks like, pretty suburban, in the time frame that I would imagine you grew up. Was it a pretty normal life compared to the people around you?
Yes. So I grew up in, like you said, a nice suburban beachside community. And my family is, I would say, upper middle class. So I grew up in a really almost idyllic setting. Was part of the church, did a lot of youth group activities and part of Christian schools, etc. So I had a really, I guess like California, a very sunny, temperate upbringing.
I'm curious about your parents' attitude when they were, when they had decided to adopt. Was that something that was based in religious beliefs or something different?
Well, for my parents, infertility was the exigence. It was the reason that they came to adoption. They were unable to have children of their own, you know, so to speak, biologically, but knew that they wanted to have a family. And so adoption was, you know, a way to allow them to step into parenthood, given the circumstances. And I wouldn't say that it was deeply shaped by their faith. It was more an avenue to have a family.
I have one of my best friends is adopted. And one of the things that he's always said is that like his, whatever group it is that he is a part of and close to, that to him, it seems more like family. And I wonder if you, knowing that you were adopted growing up, if that colored the way that you saw relationships and the people that you interacted with?
Oh, absolutely. I think one of the things that I learned early on was that you are part of a family, not necessarily by biology. We tend to assume that it's biology, it's ethnicity, it's the country where you're born that determines who and where and how you belong. But adoption really subverts all of that because you learn that family is actually a set of habits. It's the way that we choose to welcome and be with one another that shapes us into a family and gives us that deep sense of belonging. And anybody can be your family if you choose to live in fidelity with them. So having that daily experience of family allows you to recognize that my neighbors, my friends at school, my, people that look different or behave different can actually be connected to me, that there is a lot of choice involved and a lot of habits that we can practice. So I would absolutely say that that is one of the gifts that adoption has given me.
Your husband is from Burundi, is that correct?
Yes, born and raised in Burundi. He actually grew up in what we would call extreme poverty, less than a dollar a day. So his experience is the polar opposite of mine in terms of our upbringing.
How did y'all meet?
He came to the United States for a conference on reconciliation. Burundi struggles with a lot of tribal strife, and so he has always been concerned and involved with trying to be a reconciler in his own context. And I was part of a church that was concerned about reconciliation here in the States, racial reconciliation, as well as just being reconciled to one another, living in healthy relationships with each other. And so when they hosted this conference, he was one of the international people they reached out to. And so we met in Santa Barbara, California, where I was living at the time. And he likes to tell people that when he left, the only thing he went back to Burundi with that he didn't have in the first place was a little yellow post-it with my email on it.
Oh, wow. How long ago was that?
Oh, we met in, that was 1998, and we ended up marrying in 2002. So we have been on this journey together for quite a long time.
You wound up adopting two Burundi kids yourself.
Yes.
I know that your mother had told you that there's nothing you could go through that she hadn't gone through, is kind of a way to say, hey, you can be honest with me, you can share with me, because all the stuff you're going to go through, I've gone through. And one of the things that you said was, no, I'm going to have my own biological kids someday. And you haven't gone through that. And then you wound up adopting yourself.
Once again, my mother was right, because I ended up following in her footsteps and adopting. Of course, she adopted domestic. I did, jump into a international adoption. But other than that, I followed in her way of shaping family. And so my husband and I did not intend on having children, actually. By that time, we were both in our early 30s and just thought that we would be busy living into God's kingdom and being free to kind of go wherever God would send us. And it was a surprise to meet our children and feel God invite us into parenthood. That was for us really a discipleship decision to say yes when God asked us, will you make room, for these kids in your life? My son, we think, is what we would call an orphan of poverty. He was left on a roadside in a very, very poor community. And so we believe it's just that his parents didn't have the resources to care for him. My daughter, her parents died of HIV/AIDS, and she herself was quite sick. And so she's an orphan of AIDS. So interesting how God, in his wide, wild imagination, shapes families. So we have been together as a family for over 12 years.
I find that as I get older and I have experiences that my parents had, that I find myself thinking, oh, all of these feelings that I've had, my parents have felt them before because they've gone through this, whatever this circumstance is. So, about raising kids, about, well, whatever. And I wonder if that had to be especially true for you thinking, I would imagine that I would have thought, I think I have my head wrapped around this adoption thing. But the thing that the role you hadn't had before was being the adopter. And if that really made you understand it from a new perspective.
Absolutely. So, of course, adoption wasn't new to me. I had been living into the adoption story for over 30 years. But being the adopted parent, of course, opened up a whole new set of experiences for me. More conversations with my own mother, of course, because now we had even more that we could talk about together and more that I could learn from her. But there were differences, not only because I was stepping in as a mother, but I was adopting children who did not look like me. Whereas my mother and father adopted a child who I look like I could be their biological daughter. I mean, people often commented on how similar we looked. And it was always this inside joke whether or not we would tell them that I was, in fact, adopted. but, of course, I adopted children who looked so different from me. And that really did put me into a different space as a mother in a transracial adoption. And I think that was something I wasn't thinking of at the time. I, of course, had married Claude and so was part of a biracial marriage. But I hadn't thought ahead as to what that would mean as a parent. So that has been something that has been very different for me. And in one way, a place where I've had to find resources elsewhere just because that was not my mother's experience.
What's been surprising to you about that, about adopting transracially?
Sure. Well, when I brought my babies home, initially we were living in the States for the first few years of our marriage. So when we brought Justin and Emma home, they were these beautiful, adorable, chocolate-skinned African babies. And the church threw a big party for us, and everybody came and brought gifts. And, you know, in a sense, they treated us like we were Brad and Angelina, you know, with our exotic, beautiful African orphans. And people love to think that you're the heroes in the story, and they, you know, well, homecoming is intoxicating. I mean, it just is. It's exciting. But what I recognized several years later was when Trayvon Martin was shot in Florida. I remember seeing his picture on TV and realizing that my son looks like him. Now my son, you know, was older, and he didn't look like that adorable little baby anymore. He looked like Trayvon. And for me, it was the realization that my son was stepping into a very different kind of a story. And that was going to require different things of me as a parent than I had ever anticipated. So, I mean, that was the, and continues to be one of the deeper challenges for me, is to parent my beautiful children who look different from me in a world that is not always loving to them, that often assumes a lot of things just based on the color of their skin. And a lot of Christians would want me to, you know, well, come on, we're all Christians and we love your kids. And sometimes they don't recognize that they would love to just think that we are part of this beautiful adoption narrative and see them that way. And yet most of the world will look at my kids and see them as black kids with all of the freight of that in our current culture. And sometimes I have not found that folks in the church have been as able to help me on that part of the journey.
I mean, I think about things like the talk that people in the black community have to have with their kid, where they say, you know, hey, if you ever get pulled over, act this way. Or when police are talking to you, act this way for their safety. And how, you know, we as white people kind of know the mechanics of that, but it's not as intuitive as it would be coming from another person of color. And having to help your kids navigate that, you know, they're your children that you love more than anything, but there's this experience that you're trying to communicate that you don't exactly have yourself.
Well, and I think that even before I got to that step, for me was the recognition that I had to deal with my own stuff, for lack of a more theological word. I had to deal with the narratives that I was given about police and about ways to interact with police and what to believe about community safety. And I was raised, you know, to feel safe in those spaces. And I raised my kids when they were very little, you know, when we would see a policeman, I would take them up and introduce them. And, you know, like I remember sitting in a McDonald's once and this officer must have been on his break. He was having his breakfast and I brought the kids over so that they could meet him and know that if it was ever, they were ever scared, this was a safe person for them. And I was giving my children what my parents had given me and what had always served me well growing up. So many years later, to feel like maybe that I didn't understand what was going on for my friends of color, I really had to reckon with my own ignorance and blindness so that I could actually get to the place to think, oh, how do I have a different conversation with my children? And who will help me think differently and learn how to have that conversation? So I often tell people who want to adopt cross those racial lines, you have to be willing to do your own work. And the Spirit is good to lead us. You know, the Spirit is good to convict us and crack us open for the sake of our children. But we have to be willing to do our own work in order to then step in and do, you know, the parenting work for our kids. So it's been quite a journey for me.
So, you know, a lot of the book is your own story, but also just tracing through the Bible and pointing out the adoption narratives throughout it. And I just never realized how frequently that narrative came up throughout the Old Testament, throughout the New, with Jesus himself, and just how permeated the scriptures are with narratives of adoption.
Well, when I was little, I remember sitting in Sunday school class. And of course, you hear all of the Bible stories, you know, Queen Esther on her throne and Miriam dancing across, you know, the Red Sea and Joseph with his technicolor coat. But I was always drawn to Moses. You know, Moses was put into the river, you know, by one mom and met on the other side by a woman who would become his other mom. And that was so familiar to me. So I think from a very early age, I recognized those stories of adoption and gestures of adoption that we see in the Bible. And so Moses and his story has actually become so foundational for me, you know, in that when we look at Moses, we actually see a pretty well-formed kind of an archetype of an adoptive family. We have the birth family. We see an adoptive mom step into the story, and we even get to glimpse Moses as an adult wrestling with his dual identity as both Hebrew and Egyptian. But that, of course, is just the beginning of where we see adoption in the story, as you've said.
I wonder if that was meaningful for you, either as a child growing up or when you, I remember I heard you say one time that it was relatively later in life that you realized just the adoption narrative in Jesus's own life and what exactly that meant to you.
Well, it was interesting that it took me 40 some years to recognize that Jesus was adopted. You would think that one I would have caught on a lot quicker, but it was, in my 40s when I recognized, well, Jesus was born of Mother Mary, so biologically, you know, Mary's son, but he was adopted by Joseph. And so then I started to read through the Gospels through that lens. How does the adoptive experience of Jesus shape what I see when I watch him interact with people? And I think one of the big aha moments for me was that, you know, Jesus had a very wide understanding of who could be his family. So there's this story that we hear in all three of the synoptic gospels, where Jesus is in his hometown and he's, you know, talking and teaching, and his mom and his siblings come to get him. And he's, you know, he says, well, really, who is my mother? Who are my brothers and my sisters? And of course, everybody in the crowd is pointing to them, right? They're right over there. They're calling for you. We all know who they are. And he says, anybody can be my mother or my brother if we are in God's family. And that must have taken the oxygen out of the room or out of the crowd that day, because that was not the way that people understood family in the day, back in that time, for sure. But here he was saying that any of you could be my family. And I really believe that he learned that from Joseph. He got many wonderful, gifts from Mother Mary, and obviously from, you know, God, his father. But he also was given gifts from Joseph, his adoptive father. And I think one of them was that understanding that any one of you out here in this crowd could be my family. It's the way that we behave towards one another, the way that we welcome and receive each other, the way that we show this reliable, steady hospitality to one another that will allow us to actually be like brothers or sisters or mothers or fathers. So I think that Joseph gave Jesus such an amazing gift. And I hope that that's what those of us who are part of the Company of the Adopted will break open and give, not just to our families, but to our churches and our communities as well.
I think that a lot of times, especially now, I don't know if this would have been true historically, but we kind of romanticize the idea of adoption. And, you know, you mentioned you were kind of treated as heroes of the story when you adopted your children. And I think that, like a lot of things, there is obviously something very, very beautiful about adoption. But I think it is also very hard work in a lot of ways, in the ways that we've talked about, and in the way that you have to relate to your children who have different skin pigment than you, and the differences that that makes. And then also for people who maybe adopt children when they weren't infants or babies, and they've had a little bit of life, a few years, to learn some things before they're adopted. And just the hard work that is often below the surface of adoption stories.
Well, there are a few things that I want to respond to, because I think they are so important, and you just kind of brought some of those right to the surface. I'll start, though, back with Moses, as I often do. Moses was born in the brickyards, you know, in the shadow of Egypt, at a time when, you know, the Hebrew people were enslaved, at a time when there was a death edict for little boys who were born to Hebrew women. And so when his mother, who we now know, her name was Jochebed, when Jochebed took him down to the edge of the Nile that morning, because she couldn't hide him any longer, you know, when she put him in that river, it wasn't because she was rejecting him, or because she was a heartless monster, or because she was being careless, all of the things we tend to think about birth mothers. She was putting him into that river as an act of immense mother love. She was relinquishing him in the hopes that there would be somebody else, God himself or somebody else down that river, who would recognize the goodness of her son and not kill him. It was because of the injustice that was underway in her neighborhood that she had to relinquish her son. And so sometimes we don't expect love to look like relinquishment, but more often than not, it is the different injustices in our society that cause women to have to relinquish their children. It is the case for both of my children. You know, one who, you know, his mom suffered under extreme poverty, and the other who struggled under a disease that was compounded by extreme poverty and et cetera, civil war and whatnot, that these women relinquished their children, not because they wanted to, but they really did in different ways. It was the only it was the only thing on offer for them in that dire moment. So I think we have to recognize the adoption story begins often with some kind of injustice or even generations of injustice that it can impinge upon a woman and her family that make relinquishing a child the most hopeful, loving thing they can do in that moment. Now, that helps me talk to my children about the dynamics that would have led their moms to let them go. But it doesn't take away the sadness. It doesn't take away the lament that we have to step into together as a family, because it's always sad when a mom can't keep her child for whatever reason. So I think that part of, I'm committed to talking about adoption as redemptive, because I want to name redemption every chance I get. But I think in the adoption story, we have, for me, if I can talk about the relinquishment and the injustice and talk about the ways in which God allows us to step in and be redemptive partners with one another, somehow being able to talk about those together, to me, brings about at least a more wholeness as we talk about the complicated sadness and goodness that is all part of the adoptive story. So that's where I would start. Mm.
Well, I wonder, talking big picture, when we talk about the narratives all through Scripture with Moses and Jesus and everyone in between, why is that meaningful? Like, what's the cash value? What do we learn from this adoption narrative that we can take with us today?
Well, the most basic is that we are shaped by belonging, not just biology. And it's so basic that I think it's easy to miss it or to want to jump step over it. But it really is to me a cornerstone in understanding that family isn't only or most definitively shaped by biology. It is shaped by the ways that we show up in daily ways and belong to one another. And, you know, because the metaphor of family is woven all throughout Scripture, it is that deep metaphor for understanding what it is to belong to one another and belong in God's family. And we all come to that table as God's adopted children. Paul tells us multiple times in his various epistles that we are adopted sons and daughters. That's how we come into God's family. And it is, you know, these habits of belonging, the ways that God has been faithful and hospitable to us, and that we then get to reciprocate as best we can with one another and with God, that we get to belong. So it pushes against our tendency to think that biology is the most definitive thing. It pushes us against thinking that nationality and ethnicity are so deeply determinative, because actually you can belong to somebody who doesn't look like you, who doesn't come from the same country of origin that you do, and yet that deep fidelity allows us to belong to one another. It's what allows us to belong to God.
I mean, it sounds like what you're saying is that the adoption narratives in Scripture remind us that we come from the same Creator, and that there's so much more in that. That's enough for us to be more similar than different. And I don't know, it sounds very trite, but like that we're all loved very much by the same God.
Well, we're part of the same family. We're part of the same family tree.
Right.
But, you know, we are more alike than we think. And yet, I think adoption tells us that we are different. I think one of the things I love when I look at the metaphor of adoption is, yes, we are different. I mean, adoption doesn't let you off the hook. From the very first moment, you recognize that we are coming together from different places, whether it's a different family, you know, family of origin or a different country. Right up front, we know that there is difference, but that difference is not definitive. It doesn't have to be the reason that there is a wedge between us. And there are ways that we can connect with each other that embrace that difference and allow it to become part of who we all are as a family. So I am a different person because of my Burundian children, just like they are different people because of their American mom. We are mutually transformed by the ways in which we are different and the ways in which we are, you know, human beings, part of the same family, part of God's family. It's both.
And I think part of what I was trying to get at is that there's so, but behind so many problems today lies fear. We want to deport people because of fear, and we want to own guns because of fear. And that behind that fear lies this just belief that we are unreconcilably different. I think I just made up a word. But I think what that adoption narrative says is that is not the case. We do have differences that we need to celebrate because God is showing his creativity. And at the same time, there is a sameness to celebrate as well.
And, you know, I think fear, I was afraid of a special needs child. This is not one of my more glorious moments, I have to confess. But when I had to fill out all the paperwork about the child that we would adopt, you know, they make you do, it's like a 7-page form where you have to tick all these boxes. Will you accept a child that's deaf? Will you accept a child that's mute? Will you accept a child missing one limb? Will you accept, right? You have to go through this meticulous form and tick the boxes about what you will and won't accept in a child so that they can match you with an appropriate child. Now, this was made easier for me because we had already met my son first and he's perfectly healthy. So I just, in my mind, said, I'm just going to go through this form and, you know, match it to what I know about my son, perfectly healthy.
Right.
That meant I was saying things like, nope, I don't want a baby who's deaf. I don't want a baby who has a hard time with speech. I was ticking all those boxes and I was recognizing how limited my own hospitality was in that moment because all of these other maladies really frightened me. You know, even though I knew that my son was healthy, I thought, oh, I don't know if I could handle a baby who was sick or couldn't speak or right. So it revealed something about my own heart. And it would be a little later that our daughter came to us. And she came to us with, you know, HIV/AIDS, testing positive for that virus. She came to us with a hearing challenge and a speech challenge. And what I would have rejected on paper because I was so afraid, you know, all of a sudden it's like, well, that's my daughter. Now I'm not afraid of those things. I love her. I know her. And it's interesting how much fear of what we don't know, you know, can really get the best of us. But here she is, this young baby, this beautiful little girl I knew, and I wasn't scared about any of those things when we brought her home. So I think so much what we don't know, what we're unfamiliar with, is very frightening to us.
So I don't know, I'm sure the stats are out there and I feel like it would back this up, but I feel as though there's been an increase in adoption in the last several years, especially by Christians. And I wonder, you know, if you just want to, I wonder just your opinions and your thoughts on speaking to that in the, you know, the responsibility that followers of Christ have to take care of his creation and that special calling.
I get asked quite a bit about, you know, should we adopt, or can you make the case for Christians adopting? And that's a very reasonable question, giving my own story and this recent book, or my first book actually. But I take a step further back. We are called to be practitioners of shalom, of being God's wholeness to his world, to being his partners in bringing about that reconciliation of all things. And I think that our first response always should be, in what ways am I participating in God's shalom? In my own family, in my community, in my church. Now, that may be an invitation to adopt. That was the story for me and my husband, very clearly. But there are a lot of families who are on the edge of falling, you know, into poverty here in the U.S. Yeah. And they could really use some people who would shore them up, who would care about policies that affect their wages or resources available to their local schools or public transportation so that they can have, you know, the ability to get to and from their places of employment. I mean, there are ways that we can be advocates for families. There are ways that we can come alongside single moms and be that person who is reliable. They can call in the middle of the night if they need to run to the, you know, drugstore to get an antibiotic for their kid, and they know that there's somebody who can help and who can come over and be with them or babysit, you know, when they have to take a different shift. And I think there are other ways that we can, in immediate ways, step in and support families. And that is also contributing to that shalom, that wholeness, stitching together things that have been pulled apart in our communities. So, yes, if you are called to adopt, it is holy work. But it is also holy work to come alongside the families in our neighborhoods that are struggling. That is also what we are invited into when we're called to be good neighbors to one another. So I often challenge people, you know, where are you already practicing shalom? That to me is a pretty good indicator as to whether or not you will then be able to, you know, step into another modern structure of shalom, which is adoption. So I would always ask people to let's start a little further back and then see if that does in fact get you to adoption or not.
Well, I mean, there's so many that for whatever reason may not be equipped for adoption for whatever reason, emotionally, financially, however, but there are ways. And I think like you were saying, the plan A of a child staying with their biological parents is best if that's possible.
Right. It's, you know, this is always a hard one for me as an adopted person. You have to understand my entire experience of family is bookended by adoption, right? That's how I came into my family. It's also how I have become a parent. So I'm always very careful to not say that adoption is second best. There is something about that that feels a bit of a betrayal to the way that God has shaped my family.
Sure.
And yet I understand that what we want is for a world that is just flooded with justice. Yeah. And part of what justice looks like is families not being torn apart by war and disease and poverty and all of these things that have often caused women to have to relinquish their children. So my husband and I do development work in Burundi. And, you know, for us, yes, we are taking care of Justin and Emma on one side of the relinquishment, right? They have been relinquished and we have adopted them. And as I said, I believe that is holy. But the work we do in Burundi is working with families in extreme poverty, because we don't want them to have to suffer the kind of injustices. We want to help them have strong, healthy, viable families so that they are not ever having to make those same choices. And we believe that's also holy work, is working on both sides of relinquishment. There'll always be a need for adoption. There are ways in which, even if it wasn't injustice, there just is, you know, bodies age, accidents happen. We're always going to need adoption in the world. But beyond that, God has adopted us. So adoption is an eternal part of our family, even if the world is set completely right, and justice rolls down, as Amos says, and we all dream, even in a world perfectly calibrated by justice, adoption is an eternal presence, because that is how we get into God's family. So that's one of the ways that I try and understand that even in a world that is completely just, adoption remains a really important part of how God shapes families.
Well, Kelly, I thank you so much for just being here and sharing your story with us. I'll have links to the book and to your website on the show notes for anybody who wants to grab the book or read more about you. But thanks so much for being on the show.
Well, thank you for having me.
Thanks for joining me for another episode of Seminary Dropout. Remember, you can find all the show notes for this show and all shows at shaneblackshear.com. Oh, and hey, have you ever thought about starting your very own podcast? I bet you have, and I think you should do it. In fact, I've created a course just for you to teach you everything that I've learned over the last couple of years producing Seminary Dropout. So if you're interested in podcasting and want to learn how, go check out my course. You can go there by typing in podcastingforeveryone.org. And you can get a special discount by typing in the discount code Seminary Dropout, all one word. That'll give you 25% off. So go check it out. If you have any questions, let me know. Okay. Thanks to those that left ratings and reviews on iTunes this week. Remember, that keeps the show front and center. Also, remember, you can find me on Twitter at @beardonabike. That's @beardonabike. Also, I'm on Facebook, facebook.com/ShaneBlackshear123. And remember that Seminary Dropout is listener supported. You can visit supportseminarydropout.com and press Become a Patron. Remember, this music you're listening to right now is by D.L. Rossi. You can find him online on iTunes and at dlrossi.com. All right, thanks again for joining me for another episode of Seminary Dropout. Stay tuned for next week's episode. Love you. Take care. Yeah, that my best I always seem to bring.